Miss something?
Never mind.
I know you can't wait.
You can catch up right here. Catch up right here.
Claire and Dane's podcast.
Channel 9's hit series, Love Child. Season 4 is back. We're up to episode 2, which is airing tomorrow night, Channel 9, 8:40. And joining us right now is Mandy McKilney, who is matron on Love Child. Good morning, Mandy.
Good morning.
Now, I have to ask you, matron's pretty hard on the girls and herself. What's it like to play matron?
She doesn't do a job to make friends, that's for
no.
sure. but she certainly does it with the best of intentions, which, you know, some of the worst things in history have been done with the best of intentions. But she's definitely trying to instill a sense of discipline and responsibility in these young girls who she feels have another chance at life, you know.
Absolutely.
Because it was very, 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 very frowned upon that women would have a child out of wedlock. And it's very hard for us modern heads to get our heads around. But Matron sort of is the only one in the show that really represents the status quo, the establishment, you know. And the great part of this series is that it's in 1972 and it was the start of the Whitlam era. Mm. And it's the real end of the old establishment, you know. So it's a great story for Matron this year, because she really is, you know, she's no longer the majority of Australia. Australia's changing and becoming what we know it is today.
Absolutely. And Mandy, since it is 1972 in this season, now you were in the 60s last season, have the dresses and the kind of feel changed?
Yeah, well, a lot of the girls are wearing slacks now, you know, which they certainly didn't before, you know, it was all the mini skirts and things like that. So there's a lot of flared trousers and a lot of crocheted sort of vests and things like that. It's really colourful and psychedelic and very exciting. It's brought a whole new sort of level of visual interest to the show.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, your uniform hasn't changed too much.
No. Too much. Matron and change is not really words you hear in the same sentence often.
Absolutely. Now, episode 1 aired last Tuesday, and it was really, really hard to see Patty die. Patty was one of my favourites on the show. Was it hard on the whole cast to film that episode?
Incredibly hard. You know, without sounding glib, we really are a little family, you know. Aww. And especially with Matron's relationships with those girls and my relationships with those girls, you know, I've watched them blossom and become young ladies, you know, and all of them go on to great careers of their own, you know, but sort of, you know, I've seen them grow, and and to see Patty go was just devastating for all of us, not just because Harriet is such a wonderful person, you know, but also we all fell in love with Patty. You know, she's just such a lovely, lovely character.
Absolutely.
And we did the first read-through, you know, all together, and all of us were in tears. We just couldn't bear the thought of doing a show without her, you know.
Yeah.
So she's very much, as all the girls, you know, always remain part of our hearts, you know.
Absolutely. And Mandy, this season as well, you're keeping a big secret as matron. Without giving too much away, how does that play out?
Well, I think, you know, the great thing the writers have given Matron this year is that, you know, it really is her pride in her work has always been able to be backed up by, you know, she's never made a mistake. And to see Matron have to admit to being human, being fallible and making a mistake, you know, albeit an extremely big one.
Yeah, yeah.
it's, you know, something it's a bit hard to come back from. But her inability to accept that she's capable of making such a massive mistake is, you know, really fabulous for me as an actor and for her as a character. And it really is about someone, you know, we see it with politicians all the time, you know, that inability to let go of the pride, you know, and to say, yes, I'm human and I'm really sorry.
We're talking right now the useless junk drawer. Now, I've been led to believe my whole life that everyone has one of these. And I want to know whether it's true. So my mum had one when I was living at home, and it was one of those drawers where it had a whole heap of her paperwork that she probably never ever saw again, a whole heap of pens and bits and pieces. Whenever you needed a pen, you'd go to this drawer, and 90% of the time you were guaranteed that the pen you picked up probably didn't work. And since moving out of home, I've accidentally created my own junk drawer. And I think we do all have one. In my junk drawer, I went through it not long ago. In my junk drawer, I found a half a garlic press. So you know those garlic presses you buy and you squeeze them together and it's like spits out little bits of garlic? I have half of one. So I'm not quite sure why I have half, where the other half went. I also found about 10 plastic mixing spoons. You know those hard plastic ones that you use to like stir soups and stuff? I don't think I've ever used them. But I want to know on 13, 12, 16, do you have a junk drawer and what is in it? What's the most useless thing you have in your house? Cassandra's given us a call this morning on 13, 12, 16. Now, you have a junk drawer, am I correct?
I certainly do.
Is there a lot of junk in this drawer? Is it a small drawer or a big one?
No, it's a small drawer. It's just one of the little ones in my kitchen.
Okay. And what do you have in this junk drawer?
Well, my mum likes to hoard things and keep things of sentimental value.
Right. And you've picked up this habit?
No, I haven't picked up this habit. This is a shared drawer, so it's partially hers as well.
Okay.
So in this drawer, I have a jar in which she has kept a scab from one of my brother's biggest falls.
What?
A thorn that was pulled out from his thumb by a doctor. And the first time I ever got a leg wax in high school, she's kept the strip of wax.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Why? Why, Cassandra?
My mum thinks these are sentimental things.
Now, the big question here, Cassandra, is are you going to take these and give them to the next generation?
My mum's yelling out, going, yes, yes, yes. No, they're going in the bin.
Cassandra, that is absolute gold. Give your mum a high five because I don't think I know many people that would keep those kind of sentimental things.
No, neither do I. I've got to live with one.
Oh, well, if there is anything in a junk drawer, that's definitely one of the more obscure ones. Thanks for your call, Cassandra.
Thanks.
He joined Hamish and Andy last year for Cool Boys and the Front Man. It is the one and only Shannon Knoll joining us this morning. Good morning, Shannon.
Yeah, good day, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Now, we loved seeing you at Rankin Springs last year with Hamish and Andy. What was it like working with the boys?
Yeah, no, they're great fellas, you know. I've known the boys for a long time now, and they're always so much fun, you know. It's very infectious, the laughter that we all share on things like that. So it's just a lot of fun in general, mate. It's really good.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you now that everyone had an absolute ball out there at Rankin Springs. But, Shannon, let's talk about something that's been happening with you recently. You've got a new single out, Southern Sky.
Yeah.
What's your inspiration behind this song?
Yeah, mate, I come up with a hook one time. I think it was, just seeing other people touring the States and they were leaving Australia to break it in the rest of the world and just being away for months and months and, you know, 18 months at a time sort of thing. I just thought, wow, that'd be really tough. I'd find that really tough being away for that long, you know. I think I could go over there for a little bit of a go, but not. Don't think I'd be too keen on being being over there for like 18 months, you know.
Yeah.
It's obviously with family and that sort of thing, but on top of that too, you know, I'm sort of pretty keen to, you know, I've got a lot of touring here in Australia and enjoy that immensely, you know, so. I think I don't know if I'd actually want to leave Australia. So that's sort of the whole meaning behind the song. It's live and die under a southern sky and be content in doing that, you know. And you know, also a celebration of the beautiful things, some of the beautiful things in Australia and the things that make Australia great.
Oh, absolutely. And your music video really kind of showcases that as well. You've got some amazing landscapes in that.
Yeah, it was really beautiful spots up there at Pocalbin. In the Hunter Valley and then obviously on Nobby's Beach in Newcastle. You know, we had some beautiful weather too. It was a great time of year to do it. And it's just amazing. Some breathtaking places up there.
How long does it take you to film something like Southern Skies?
Well, we started about 7 o'clock one day. Went all the way through to about 6 that night, and then we're up at 5 the next morning, and then shot from about 5:30 till about midday.
Wow, so it does take a full few days to get something like that done.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was sort of, you know, all but 2 sort of days, nearly, or a day and a half,
yeah. Yeah, right. Can we expect more songs like that on the new album that I believe you're releasing later this year?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like the best thing, I was signed to Warner's now, and we talked about style and lyrical content and that sort of thing too. So there's a lot more of, you know, me on this album, I think, of what makes, how I feel about things and what I've been through and who I am, sort of thing. So it's a much, much more personal album, I think, this one, which I'm really looking forward to getting out and seeing what people think of it.